This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Division of the Arts and Humanities at the University of Chicago, offering an interdisciplinary Master of Arts program in humanities that provides individualized attention in a supporting community. The flexible curriculum allows students to focus coursework within a single department or engage with multiple disciplines, creating a uniquely tailored graduate degree. Applications now open for the April 30th deadline at humanities.uchicago.edu. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration prepares professionals to address today's most pressing challenges and offers flexible options with part-time and evening classes to support busy adults balancing complex schedules. Inspire change, shape the future at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work.
I just want young America to do me one favor. Just one favor. Exercise the right to dream. You must face reality, that which is. But then dream of the reality that ought to be, that must be. Live beyond the pain of reality with the dream of a bright tomorrow. Use hope and imagination as weapons of survival and progress. Use love to motivate you and obligate you to serve the human family. Young America, dream!
Chicago and the world has lost a towering icon of civil rights. I'm your host, Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. The Reverend Jesse Jackson has died at the age of 84. He was one of the most recognizable civil rights leaders of the last half century. Tall, compelling, and with an energy that made him a leader for a time and people who needed him.
I am black, beautiful, proud. I must be respected.
For more on his life and legacy, and impact on the country and on Chicago, we turn to journalist Natalie Moore, senior lecturer at Northwestern's Medill School and Chicago Sun-Times columnist, and the Reverend Otis Moss III, senior pastor at Trinity United Church of Christ. Each guest began with their personal reflections of Reverend Jackson. Natalie went first.
Sasha, I've often wondered how I would feel because we all knew that this day was coming. So on one hand, it feels like the end of an era, an end of personality-driven Black political leadership. But I also think of myself as a kid who grew up on the South Side of Chicago, and Operation Push, as it was known then, was, you know, a center of Black political activity. I think about his runs for president of the United States in 1984, 1988. I've gone to the Push MLK breakfast for many years, sometimes as a reporter if there's a mayoral race and everybody shows up, sometimes as just a guest. My father was on the board of Push XL, which is the entity that gave scholarships. I've been on panels with the Reverend. I've interviewed him for Ebony Magazine about him pushing to get more Black labor participation in Silicon Valley. But it's incredible sadness for the city, for the world. You know, he was an international humanitarian also.
Reverend Moss, how are you processing the news?
And I feel the same the way that Sister Moore, that we have lost a towering figure who has had an incredible impact upon not only the nation, but the world. And I grew up listening to Reverend Jackson. I was, as a child, quote unquote, dragged to the Operation Push conventions in Chicago. I remember the moments of the 84 convention when he first ran, and the time period of the anti-apartheid activism that our church and our local push community in Cleveland, Ohio was involved in. And I remember hearing the stories and sitting around dinner table with the Jackson family as a child and hearing the organizing and the work that they were planning to do and just listening in, not knowing that I was in the presence of someone who was making such an incredible impact on our community and world.
Yeah. Natalie, do we know anything about the cause of death?
Almost a decade ago, he announced that he had Parkinson's disease, but that was in 2017. But it turns out it was a misdiagnosis. And last year, the family said that he had progressive supranuclear palsy, a neurological disease that can be misdiagnosed as that.
Mm-hmm. How did Jackson get involved in civil rights?
He was a product of his time. Growing up, becoming a young man in the 60s, he attended North Carolina A&T University in North Carolina, a historically Black college. And then he became a lieutenant for Dr. Martin Luther King, got involved in the Southern Christian Leadership Council. And, you know, most people have seen that picture of King on the balcony of the Lorraine Hotel. Mm-hmm. And Jesse Jackson is standing next to him.
Yeah. Tell us more about his early life and really how the Reverend emerged as a leader here in this city.
Well, Jesse Jackson was not necessarily beloved by everyone in SCLC. And after King's death, there was a split. So he came to Chicago. He also was a student at Chicago Theological Seminary. And so he formed Operation Breadbasket here. And that's where the Saturday morning used to start off those meetings, you know, with Black crowds advocating for self-determination, Black buying power, and also the need for jobs. So before King's death, he had been the national director of Operation Breadbasket.
Right.
But then that morphed into Operation Push in 1971, and he stayed in Chicago with his family.
Yeah, Jackson was also known as a great orator. I want to play a little bit of his historic speech from the 1988 Democratic Convention.
When we divide, we cannot win. We must find common ground as a basis for survival and development and change and growth.
Reverend Moss, you know, before there was Barack Obama and that popular refrain we all remember, yes, we can, there was Jesse Jackson and that message of keep hope alive. Where were you when you heard that speech?
I was sitting in front of the TV listening to the speech in 88. And I remember my father was at the convention and we were getting calls from my father about what was happening on the floor. It was extraordinary, absolutely extraordinary. And the speech, Keep Hope Alive, he was pulling from a variety of African-American rhetorical geniuses at that time. He was pulling a little bit from what he had witnessed with Harold Washington, but he was also pulling from Shirley Chisholm. And also pulling from Dr. King. He was also drawing on a little known but incredibly impactful person by the name of William Holmes Borders in Atlanta. And so there was a variety of people. So when people of African descent were hearing this, especially in the South, they were hearing a little bit of Harold Washington. Those in New York were hearing some Shirley Chisholm. Mm-hmm. Those in Atlanta were hearing from William Holmes Borders. And they were elated, all of these people in local communities who now have risen rhetorically in the voice of Reverend Jackson in 88.
Let's hear that voice.
When my name goes in nomination, your name goes in nomination. I was born in the slum, but the slum was not born in me. And it wasn't born in you. And you can make it. Wherever you are tonight, you can make it. can make it. It gets dark sometimes, but the morning comes. Don't you surrender. Suffering breeds character. Character breeds faith. In the end, faith will not disappoint. You must not surrender. You may or may not get there, but just know that you are qualified and you hold on and hold out. We must never surrender. America will get better and better. Keep hope alive. Keep hope alive. Keep hope alive.
Still getting chills hearing that speech. Natalie, how did it make you feel?
You know, it's just, it's one of those terms that just become baked into society. You know, I heard that as a kid. You know, Jesse Jackson would make different TV appearances, you know, playing himself. And it would be, I'm thinking about the A Different World episode.
Yes.
You know, Run, Jesse, Run, you know, keep hope alive. You know, he had the, I mean, he was a reverend. And he had that cadence of a Baptist preacher, and he was able to whip up crowds. And people who worked for him said that, you know, he could touch rural white farmers just as much as he could touch Black congregants.
In 1988, Jesse Jackson was not just running against a conservative Republican Party, but also in a way against his own party, a Democratic Party that he felt at the time had turned its back on progressive policies and values. He wasn't the first Black American to run for president, but his campaigns, particularly that final run in 1988, they were considered pivotal for American presidential politics. Help us understand why, Natalie.
I think it's really important to remember this because sometimes Jesse Jackson has been lampooned as always wanting to be in front of the camera, a celebrity chaser. And yes, I think that there are some real critiques about the personality-driven aspects of his leadership. But he was really progressive and took stands on issues that weren't popular. You know, he had been championing Palestinian rights for decades. He spoke out against apartheid. You know, he was inclusive of LGBTQ plus people. And that might sound very basic right now, but in the 1980s, it was not. Mm-hmm. He was able to negotiate the release of hostages all over the world. And just for a little bit of levity, I was reminded of Chris Rock, the comedian stand-up in 1999, where he was saying, how in the world did Jesse get to free those hostages? And he said, you know what? I bet he said, you want to make the United States really mad? Give the hostages to me. So, you know, his internationalism, you know, his domestic policy issues really need to be remembered because I think back to Laquan McDonald, for example. And, you know, after the video was released showing that a Chicago police officer killed him with 16 shots, there were protests in Chicago. And, you know, I was in the newsroom then editing. And a lot of the media focused on Jesse, and the younger activists felt, you know, a certain kind of way about that. Like, he's old guard. Why are you privileging his voice? And, you know, that was perhaps a mistake on the media's part. But I don't think just because someone is older or forming the old guard does not mean that you should dismiss them. And I don't think a lot of younger people really understand his politics and what he has meant, not just to Chicago, but the global community.
Reverend, do you remember his presidential runs and the impact they made on you personally?
Absolutely. From 84 and 88, I was in high school and was working on the campaign. Couldn't vote at the time, but was going to turn 18 in time to in the primary to be able to vote for him. But what was extraordinary was how he transformed politics. Ron Brown, who ends up becoming the chair of the Democratic National Convention because of the work of Jesse Jackson, Donna Brazile, Mignon Moore, Leah Daughtry, all of these Black women who end up becoming the architects for a variety of campaigns is because of the work of Jesse Jackson. There was an entire work and connected with Operation Bear Basket that moves into Operation Push, which was pushing for the inclusion of women, Black people, Latino, and Asians on Fortune 500 boards. If you were to interview John Rogers, he would tell you that part of the success of his work is because of the work of Jesse Jackson. He was an environmental activist before environmental activists were popular. He was pro-Palestinian, Palestinian dignity before that became normative. This is already mentioned, and he was speaking about LGBTQIA inclusion before that was popular.
Right.
Bernie Sanders' platform is nothing but a redux of Jesse Jackson's. It's extraordinary. And the what we call the Rainbow Push Coalition is then also connected to the Rainbow Coalition of Fred Hampton. So there's all these connections that Jesse Jackson was, in many ways, a gumbo chef or a DJ, bringing together all of the different aspects of our culture and presenting a democratic culinary delight of how we can create a nation that is not yet.
Yeah. And he had a specific impact on Black Democrats, too. Right, Natalie? I mean, I remember all the early comparisons when Barack Obama was running initially, and a lot of talk about their relationship on and off the stage.
Yeah. And just also with the space that Operation Push in the Kenwood neighborhood meant on Saturdays. Any politician worth his or her salt wanted to come and get a few minutes to talk on stage. This is a place where Michael Jordan played basketball. You might see Kofi Annan there. Oprah Winfrey would come on Saturdays before she became a household name. A corduroy clad Barack Obama would come there. So it was really a place for everybody and neighbors, grassroots organizations. You know, Jesse Jackson did not open a church in Chicago. His church instead, as a metaphor, was the Saturday space. And I used to watch it on TV. Like it would be on, it wasn't cable then, but like public access television would broadcast live Saturday Push sessions.
Yeah. Well, you know, given that, right, we're talking about somebody who was born in Greenville, South Carolina, traveled to Chicago when he was just a teenager, traveled the country, traveled the world, and could have lived virtually anywhere, but chose to live here. Reverend Moss, what do you think his legacy will be in the city of Chicago? Talk us through that.
I think that he will be seen as this towering global figure who transformed the politics of Chicago, the community, and really challenged our imagination to decolonize our imagination. Every time I think about the I am somebody speech and refrain, that he was always challenging young people to break the ceiling in terms of their imagination, to see them beyond. And anyone who is moving forward or finds themselves in a space where they have a mic and a voice, they will be connected and need to thank Reverend Jackson. There is no Barack Obama and Michelle Obama without the work of Jesse Jackson. He added somewhere between 6 and 8 million, I believe, new voters to the rolls in terms of his registration. It's absolutely extraordinary. It changed politics in America, and Chicago became the epicenter for that through what is now Rainbow Push, but was first Operation Push and then Operation Breadbasket before that. And I think that we need to make sure that as an ancestor, that we elevate the legacy of Reverend Jackson, but we also should elevate the work of Sister Jackson as she was working behind the scenes, as Reverend Jackson was providing the vision, she was providing the scaffolding and infrastructure so that he could do the work that he was doing.
Such a long list of achievements to document, to remember. Natalie, how should we keep Reverend Jackson's memory alive across this country?
Well, one thing I wanted to add is You know, back to the question about why would Jesse Jackson stay in Chicago? Chicago is the capital of Black America. We're celebrating 100 years of Black history. Black History Month started in Chicago. A friend on a group chat said today, how Jesse Jackson of him to die during Black History Month. And there's one name that too. There's one name we have not mentioned is Harold Washington, the first Black mayor of Chicago, who also had a rainbow coalition, who also announced his run for mayor at Operation Push. So with, you know, Jesse Jackson, we have Harold Washington, we have Barack Obama. Operation Breadbasket was also about, you know, grocery stores and jobs and, you know, getting Johnson hair products, you know, on the shelves of retailers. You know, there's so much that Jesse Jackson touched over decades. I think keeping his memory alive as an ancestor and continuing to say his name. Mm-hmm. Push still exists. And I know Yusef Jackson has been doing a lot of work there. But, you know, I think our political times now don't have... I don't think people want the space for that kind of singular figure. And I don't know where we go from here, except to read his texts, listen to his words, and use that to, you know, influence our politics, whether grassroots or electoral.
We've been talking with journalist Natalie Moore, who's a senior lecturer at Northwestern's Medill School and a Chicago Sun-Times columnist, and the Reverend Otis Moss III, who's senior pastor at Trinity United Church of Christ. Thank you both for sharing your reflections this morning.
Thank you, Sasha.
Thanks for listening to In the Loop. I'm your host, Sasha Ann Simons. Join me here every weekday for in-depth coverage of Chicago news and culture. Let's talk again soon.